I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, how does a child make that journey from their village in Central America to the United States and then make it through months of detention in U.S. immigration camps? Beyond the practical manner of making that journey, how do they process the trauma of the journey, the danger, the hunger, being preyed on, and then going off into the unknown? For the first time, we have a memoir written by an unaccompanied minor, Dee Esperanza, who came to El Norte and was caught in the first Trump administration's zero-tolerance family separation policy. The experiences are told in this new book, Detained, A Boy's Journey of Survival and Resilience. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There have been times while covering immigration, I've met and interviewed children who have made the trek from Central America to our border. I've never gotten a satisfactory answer to the obvious question, how did you manage to make that journey and what was it like? Until now, the book Detained, A Boy's Journey of Survival and Resilience tells that story with the details that are profound and impactful. This is the first memoir written by an unaccompanied minor who was also locked up in the Trump family separation camps. We're joined by the author. He goes by Dee Esperanza. Dee, welcome to The Source. Bienvenidos. It's great to have you. Also, the book is co-written by Gerardo Ivan Morales, and he is a fellow immigrant, a DACA recipient. He's a teacher. He was assigned to the Tornillo camp. And Ivan, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having us here.
And Dee's primary language is Spanish, so we're going to be going back and forth between English and Spanish to help him tell the story, and we can hear the story. And so with that said, let me go to, so Ivan, tell me about how you came to meet Dee, and what was that like at the camp?
Definitely. As you mentioned, I'm a DACA recipient, so as an immigrant, I've been extremely passionate about advocating for human rights and immigration. And in the summer of 2018, when Kids in Cages was everywhere online and every source and media outlet was, you know, reporting on the horrific family separations and the kids that were being placed in these detention centers, that was my call to take action. I wanted to figure out how I could go and be an advocate for the children and to fight for their human rights while they're being detained. And so I was deployed as an emergency service reservist. And my first day in the child detention center in Tornillo was Friday, July 13th. So a Friday the 13th, which normally a lot of people associate with an unlucky day, was one of my luckiest days, and it changed my life forever. I was assigned to Alpha 13. So Alpha 13 was a tent in the middle of the desert in Texas off of Tornillo. And inside this tent, they had 10 bunk beds that housed 20 children from Central America, from countries from Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala. And Dee Esperanza was one of them. And all of these children were extremely resilient in the face of adversity. And Dee Esperanza especially just demonstrated this outgoing personality, extremely talented and gifted. And one day he was on his bunk, very focused, writing in his composition notebook. And I walked by and I said, "Hey, Dee Esperanza, what are you up to?" And his face immediately lit up. And he said, "Do you want to read my rap slash poem? Because it's written in Spanish and so it does rhyme. It's a very powerful poem." When I read it, it brought me to tears. He was able to capture such a powerful, emotional, raw depiction of what immigrants face. And I told him, I said, "You have such a gift and talent. you should continue writing your story, and one day the world will get to hear your story. And he surprised me. He continued writing, and then he surprised me with the composition notebook. He showed it to me, and I was in shock. I was like, wow, you brought your entire life story. We're talking about his 5-month harrowing journey to the United States and the 5 months that he was detained inside of a child detention center here while in the care and custody of the United States. And so such a powerful story, such a powerful journal that he wrote while being detained. And then years later, when he was an adult, we kind of crossed paths again. And I told him that I still to this day thought about his powerful poem. And I asked him, I said, would you be interested in letting me translate it into English? And right away he was on board. He was very much wanting to advocate for unaccompanied minors seeking asylum in the United States. And he wanted to give them that representation and that voice, because we have over 100,000 unaccompanied minors that come to the United States and no one knows their story until now. And so we took on the journey of going into the literary publishing world. We had no idea, no experience. It was fully navigating this unknown territory, but with this drive to get this story published. And so Detained, A Boy's Journal of Survival and Resilience is the translation of De Esperanza's entire composition notebook that he wrote while being detained. And we do have we do have the actual composition notebook with us that will be coming with us on the Texas tour. And so we will be in San Antonio this coming Saturday at Trinity College. And I will actually bring alongside with me De Esperanza's written composition notebook so that people can actually see his penmanship, his writings, his drawing, his poem. And they can see that, because we're bringing that to life with Detained.
Right. So for details, it'll be Saturday at 7 p.m. at Trinity University at the Dickey Hall. It will be a book release celebration, and Gerardo Ivan Morales will be there, and you will be able to do it. So let's talk about why we have to say De Esperanza, aren't able to use his real name. And talking about this kind of puts it in context about how things are complicated with legal status and being able to remain in the United States. So can we talk about that for a moment?
Definitely. So due to the political climate right now and everything that's going on, we did decide to keep De Esperanza's name and identity anonymous for now. He is currently in the process, and so we can't comment too much on that because he's currently in the process.
But it's also part of the reality. I mean, you are a DACA recipient. You were born in Mexico, came over as a dreamer. D has his own legal issues about remaining here, and we're dealing with mass deportations in the United States, a very aggressive military expulsion effort happening right now. I mean, what are you seeing? What are your thoughts?
We're in a very, very difficult time where my immigrant community is being terrorized, and a lot of horrific things are taking place. I mean, we're seeing images and videos of these mass deportations taking place and
people being snatched off the streets.
Right. I mean, it's a dangerous thing that we're seeing, and it's really heartbreaking, honestly. It's heartbreaking to see it happen. And that's why Detained is more important now than ever, because people need to understand from a personal experience and get to hear directly from someone, especially a child. Because I think when it comes to children, universally, we can all agree as a country that every child needs to be protected and their human dignity must be upheld no matter what, especially while they're in the care and custody of the United States with Health and Human Services and the Office of Refugee and Resettlement. And so I think that De Esperanza sheds light on his experience, on his day-by-day being detained, on what he saw. And it's important for people to know, because when people know, we can come together and we change.
Okay, we've got to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment about De Esperanza. You want to ask him a question, he's here. We will have translations, but Yvonne will help us with that. Call in 833-877-8255. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the new book, a memoir, Detained, A Boy's Journey of Survival and Resilience. It is the first memoir of an unaccompanied minor who came from Central America, came to the United States and was in detention in the famous Trump family separation camps, and what that process was like. This is a powerful telling of that first-person story through a child's eyes. The book really captures how important books are. It really takes you there and presents you with the view, the feeling, the details of what that experience is, and gives you a profound understanding that I don't think you can get any other way, unless you have gone through this yourself, of understanding what it is that these young people go through, what the United States is doing on the border and in these camps, and the complex nature of our policies on the border. You can call in with your questions and comments for De Esperanza and Gerardo Ivan Morales, the co-author of the book. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Ivan, if you could ask Adi, my Spanish, I'm sorry, is just not good enough. And if you could ask him, so in the book, he writes about in the very beginning of his journal that he didn't think anyone would ever read it, but here it is. Now the book his journal is turned into a book, and it will be read, I think, by thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. Because it is so powerful, and now it's being so. What are his thoughts about now so many people will be reading his writings?
Perfect. De Esperanza.
Sí.
La pregunta es, tú empiezas tu cuaderno y el libro de Detained con preguntándote que no sabes si alguien va a tener la oportunidad de leer tus palabras, lo que estás escribiendo en ese momento que eras niño. Entonces, ahora reflexionando en toda la experiencia y al momento ahorita, ya que está publicado el libro y está, ojalá que lo lean miles y miles de personas, ¿qué sientes ahora sabiendo que tus palabras las están leyendo y van a ser leídas por millones?
Se siente una emoción muy incontenible.
I feel this great emotion that I can't really contain.
Estoy muy entusiasmado de que las personas puedan leer esta historia.
I am very, very excited that people will get the opportunity to read this story.
Quiero que las personas se den cuenta de todo lo que se vive en el centro.
I want people to uncover the reality of what happens inside these centers, these child detention centers.
Me siento muy feliz que esto ya salió.
I feel very happy that the book has been released.
Fue un tiempo muy largo antes de que el libro saliera a la luz.
It was a long journey to get here before the book was officially released.
Ahora estoy muy entusiasmado, muy feliz y esperando las expectativas de las personas.
Now I'm just really grateful and happy and looking forward to hearing people's response to the book.
So Dee was 13 years old. While he made the journey and was in Tornillo. Is this a book, do you think that young teenagers should be reading this book as well as adults?
De Esperanza, en relación a la audiencia de que debe de leer el libro, ¿tú piensas que este libro está dirigido para teenagers, adolescentes y también para adultos, los dos?
Claro. Es pensado dirigido para todo tipo de público, todo tipo de persona que le gusta leer.
Of course, the audience that is intended to read Detained is for everyone. It was for anyone and everyone so that they can uncover the truth, anyone that enjoys reading.
Can you describe, it's in the book, but for our listeners, why you had to leave Honduras?
Puedes describir, yo sé que está en el libro, pero en tus propias palabras, puedes describir por qué te fuiste de Honduras?
Claro, uno de los puntos más marcados para decir.
Of course, one of the most important things to mention.
Sobre todo es la delincuencia.
Is the delinquency, the crime rate.
La falta de comida, la falta de trabajo.
A lack of resources, no food, no jobs.
And you had your grandparents, abuelitos, were taking care of you. They had an unfortunate turn of events. They died, and I'm sorry about that. And so you were left on your own. And it seemed like you really had few options other than try to find your parents in the United States. But that still had to be an incredibly brave decision. I mean, did you realize how hard the journey to the United States was going to be?
Definitivamente ha de haber sido una decisión muy grande la que tomaste y que te da su lástima, su pésame porque fallecieron tu abuela y tu tío. Entonces, esencialmente te quedaste solo, estabas completamente solo en Honduras con no otra opción más que reencontrarte con tus padres. Entonces, la pregunta aquí es, ¿te diste cuenta en ese momento qué tan difícil iba a ser la travesía?
No, la verdad que al principio para mí era más una aventura.
No, the truth is, I had no idea going into this experience how long it would take. I was in this for the adventure.
Pero claramente, mediante el tiempo iba pasando y iba avanzando por cada país.
But as the journey continued and I was advancing through each country,
viviendo realmente lo peligroso que es,
I realized how dangerous the journey is.
Donde la vida de un niño pequeño no vale mucho.
Where the life of a small child is not worth much.
You were able to ride the train, La Bestia. You write about how terrifying that was. Tell us more about that.
Tú te subiste arriba de La Bestia, el tren. Escribes en el libro sobre qué tan terrificante era esa experiencia. Entonces, qué terrible fue esa experiencia. Entonces, cuéntanos un poquito de qué sentías.
Al principio no dimensionaba lo grande que era.
At the beginning, I didn't realize how big the train would be.
Entre mis primos habían risas nerviosas.
In between my cousins and I, there were nervous laughs.
Lo mirábamos como una travesura.
We saw it as a great endeavor.
Pero cuando empezamos a sentir cómo el suelo vibraba.
But then suddenly we started feeling how the earth beneath us started to shake and vibrate.
Y empezábamos a sentir la vibración en los rieles del tren.
And we would start feeling the vibration in the rail tracks of the tracks of the train.
Nos dimos cuenta que no era más de una travesura, eso ya no era un juego.
We knew that this was going to be extremely challenging. This was not a game.
Sentir la presencia.
Feeling the presence.
Sin aún estar mirando la bestia en el horizonte.
With just seeing the beast, the train coming from the horizon.
Se sentía literalmente como si eso tuviera vida.
It felt like the beast was alive.
But then you riding it, you had to ride it.
Y después te tuviste que subir, entonces, ¿qué sentiste al tener que saltar?
Fue reacción por miedo a quedarme.
It was almost like an instant reaction in fear of what it meant if I stayed behind.
Al ver que mis primos pudieron subir, me empecé a sentir con un miedo grande a sentirme solo otra vez.
As soon as I saw that my cousins were able to get on, I started to feel deep, deep, deep fear, and I was afraid to be left behind and stay behind and be alone.
Las piernas te tiemblan y te sientes inseguro.
My legs were shaking and I felt extremely uncertain.
Cuando empiezas a aferrarte a los escalones,
When you start to get ready to jump on top of the ladder,
se puede sentir el frío y el óxido que ya tiene.
you can feel the coldness of the metal railing.
The entire journey, I mean, just call it traumatic, seems like an understatement. Is there lasting trauma? I mean, he writes about his nightmares quite a bit in the book. That was one of the things that makes him so vulnerable, seems vulnerable, and how he seems to feel things very deeply. How is he coping with the long, deep trauma from the journey, the hunger, the fear, the fact that, that they were in peril the entire time, some of these very extreme things that he had to do. How is he coping with the after effects?
Entonces, para reflexionar en tu experiencia que viviste en tu travesía para llegar a Estados Unidos, llamarlo trauma es muy, muy, no es una palabra adecuada para de verdad describir el sufrimiento, el peligro que viviste, en tu travesía. Entonces, tú hablas bastante en el libro de tu miedo, de estar aterrorizado. Hablas de tus pesadillas, que en la noche tienes pesadillas. Entonces, ahorita tienes efectos secundarios de esa experiencia hasta ahora. ¿Cómo combatiste con este trauma durante estos años? O sea, ¿cómo te afectaba lo que viviste?
Buscaba la manera de estar siempre con mi familia, nunca estar solo. El estar solo me hace entrar como en pánico.
One way that I coped was I would always surround myself with my family. I would hate to be alone. I would never want to be alone. Whenever I was alone, that's when these deep feelings would come back.
Así que creo que la forma que lo he combatido es estar rodeado siempre de mi familia y no pienso en el momento que tenga que estar lejos de ellos.
So the best way that I've coped is being, it's just surrounding myself with family and reminding myself that everything was worth it and that I have the gratitude to be with them.
But when the go to when he ends up in the hands of the U.S. government, immigration, he's separated from his cousin. There's a level of isolation from his family. When we come back, I want to hear more about what it was like to be in Tornillo, the infamous desert child detention camp. And we're going to take questions. Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment for D. Esperanza or for Ivan Morales, we want to hear from you. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we'll continue talking about the book, Detained, A Boy's Journal of Survival and Resilience. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the book Detained, A Boy's Journey of Sur Journal of Survival and Resilience. We're joined by the author, D. Esperanza. This is the journal he hand wrote as he was making that trek from his hometown, a little village in Honduras, who came up through Mexico into the United States, and then how he was in the detention camps for 5 months until he was able to be reunited with his parents. And also we're joined by Gerardo Ivan Morales. He is a teacher, a DACA recipient, and he met Di Antonio when he was there working with the children. And you can call in with your questions and comments as we're hearing about the story of the journey, how he made it through the detention centers, and how what impact this has on him and what we can learn about our complex immigration questions through his experience. 833-877-8255. Let's go to a caller. Let's go to Henrietta. Henrietta, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. My comment is I'm proud of him for him being able to tell his story so all of us can hear it. Both my maternal and paternal grandparents came the same way, but they never talked about it. So I am empty because I know very little history of my family. But then who wants to bring the trauma and the tragedy? And tell him I'm proud of him, and I know it wasn't easy, but I'm glad he has his head up. Thank you.
Henrietta, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Anyone else want to call in with a question, comment, 833-877-8255. Yvonne, can you translate that for D?
Of course. De Esperanza, tuviste una llamada y donde te comentaron, donde ella comentó que sus abuelos también vinieron a Estados Unidos de la misma manera que tú y que ellos nunca hablaron de su viaje, de su travesía para llegar a Estados Unidos. Entonces, que ella ve que es una experiencia muy traumática y con mucho trauma, pero que te aplaude, que ve que te ve a ti como alguien muy valiente por contar tu historia, que es una historia que tiene que estar escuchada y que le estás dando esa voz. Entonces, que te agradece, que eres muy valiente y gracias por contar la historia.
And his reaction, go ahead.
Sobre todo quisiera decir que muchas gracias a ella por sus palabras. Estoy muy feliz de que muchas personas están apoyando sobre este libro.
I just want to thank her for her kind words. I am really, really grateful for her words and just for everyone's support of my story.
Y el motivo sobre todo de este libro es que puedan escuchar las voces que han sido calladas.
My message and the purpose of this story is so that people can hear the voices that are silenced and that don't have representation.
Sobre todo las voces de esos miles de niños que aún siguen encerrados en los centros.
Especially to the voices of the thousands of children that are still to this day are being detained in child detention centers and being silenced.
And Ivan, when you went to go work with the children in Tornillo, I mean, what was that like for you? I mean, you talked about how, of course, you were from Mexico, you're a DACA recipient, you felt like you wanted to work with these kids and help protect their humanity. But throughout the book, we hear Dee talking about how they were being treated, they tried to strip their humanity away from them.
It was very difficult. It was a very hard experience, but I never questioned my decision to go. I see it very much kind of in the similar way of where we have the foster care system in this country, and there's so much negligence in the system. And unfortunately, so much things happen that it's a little too late. And so if you could be that one person to make the difference in just one child's life, you could even be saving their life. And so that was my motivation being there. I think that one of the most appalling things and one of the most hardest things to see is seeing the light in the eyes of Di Esperanza and the other boys and girls at that child detention centers, how that light would dim every time that they were referred to as bed numbers instead of their actual names. So every child was wearing a little name tag around their necks where it said their name, what bed number they were, what part of the detention center, if they were in Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and whenever they would be needed to go to a different room, or they would come from medical to take them to go get their immunization, the way that they would refer to these children would be like, Cama 12, bed number 12, come here. Or when the kids would get rowdy or talk, I mean, these are children, they would threaten them with reports. They would say, silencio, reporte, like silence or report. And to the minds of these children, they don't really understand what a report is. And you can even ask Di Esperanza, when he first heard these things, he feared that a report would lead to his deportation, as if to say that the people that are taking care of him, these contractors, because essentially they're a staffing agency, a contracting agency, that these people who are in the direct care of these children had that much power. Like, these children were terrified that anything that they would say that would land as a report would turn into this deportation. And so I was there as an advocate to educate. And I would tell them, I would say, first of all, there is no report. When you hear reports, that's an empty threat. That doesn't exist. What they're mentioning and what they're saying in regards to filing a form is the same form that you would file if a child was feeling sick, if a child all of a sudden stopped eating food and you were worried or concerned that they were going through something that was making them not eat the food. And so that same form that would be used essentially to document and send up to the case managers and to the clinicians was used as this fear tactic to keep the children in line. And unfortunately, there weren't enough Spanish speakers, especially as the detention center grew from 200 children to thousands and thousands, close to 5,000 children that it grew to, having the quality of these personnel was just, that was the part where I was extremely shocked, because I couldn't register to me how badly and how inhumanely these children could be taught. And so for me, my main mission was like, I will never call a child by a bed number. I will learn their names, and I will, you know, always refer to them by their names. I will always advocate for their rights. They had an instance, for example, like while we were in the cafeteria, because they would get fed breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And while they were in breakfast, my first day with Di Esperanza, I mean, it's described and detained through Di Esperanza's eyes. And even me reading back on it, it's such an appalling situation. They would hand out cereals to the children, and they would have assorted kinds of cereals, and they would limit the children to only one cereal. Whereas the other reservists, the people that were in charge of the adults, they could have as many cereals as they wanted. And so you would see these children only get one little cereal, and then these adults get two, three. Because we're talking about like the little cereals. And I was unaware that there was a rule that the children could only get one. And so I went up and I grabbed many for the children, and I grabbed them and gave them a second one. I mean, it wasn't like they were asking for something absurd. It was just, they wanted to have two little bowls of cereal in the morning for breakfast. And so I would give them out. And I remember my first day getting yelled at and getting in trouble because I wasn't supposed to do that. And my response to that was, I'm going to do it. And I made sure that anyone in Alpha 13 that needed the extra cereal would get that cereal. And then the very next day, I advocated for them in the meeting, saying like, this situation is happening. Like, we can't let this happen. Like, we cannot stay idle and have the children observe adults eat multiple boxes of cereal while these children are being denied.
Do you think those children, with cereal aside, were they treated well?
When you're in these facilities, there is a lack of acknowledgement of their humanity by addressing them by bed numbers, by not looking at them in their eyes, by not answering their requests. So, I mean, I think that's a great question. Let's give that to Di Esperanza. Let's ask Di Esperanza, how was he treated by these people that were put as the care for them?
Okay, I only have about a minute here, but okay, go ahead.
Di Esperanza?
Sí.
¿Cómo te trataba la gente? ¿Cómo te trataban la gente ahí que era inhumana y que no los ignoraban o no les daban la atención que necesitaban?
Nos trataban todo lejos de ser personas y niños.
They treated us far from being children and humans.
No toleraban que habláramos español.
They didn't tolerate us speaking in Spanish.
Ni mucho menos que pidiéramos ir al baño o si teníamos algún dolor o algo, no toleraban que habláramos.
They didn't tolerate for us to ask for any requests, even going to the restroom. It bothered them. If we were feeling sick or ill, it was an issue.
No teníamos nombre ahí adentro.
We didn't have a name while we were there.
Mi nombre ahí era número 12.
My name there was bed number 12.
All right, we got to take a break here. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about what was life like in Tonillo in the camp and also hear more about the book, Detained, A Boy's Journal of Survival and Resilience. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and The Source will continue in 1 minute. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Detained, A Boy's Journal of Survival and Resilience, a new book. It is the first time we have a memoir of a child who went through the unaccompanied arrivals situation we had on the border and then going through the Trump administration's family separation, zero tolerance, detention camps. What was that like? We have the answers. We have an answer through the child's eyes. It's a fascinating book, very gripping. It brings home just the power of reading, why we read stories like this so you can experience life through someone else's shoes. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And so, Gerardo Ivan Morales, I want to ask you this, and you help me, and you can ask, get an answer from Dee if you can. But first off, the Trump administration, their zero tolerance family separation policy was to act as a deterrent, that if they were able to have this level of cruelty on the border, separating children from their parents or from their other fellow, you know, from your cousins, that this would prevent persuade people south of the border from trying to come into the United States. Was that effective? Was that a deterrent?
That is a great question. And I think that when we're talking specifically about prevention through deterrence, it's a tactic that's been used for decades, since the 90s. It's been going on through different administrations. And in specifically when we're talking about unaccompanied minors seeking asylum to the United States, that is one specific category of migrants that come to the United States. And so these are Central American children that are coming from countries that they're fleeing horrendous, horrendous situations. And they qualify for asylum and they qualify to come to the United States. And so how do you get somewhere seeking asylum? You get to the United States border and do what Díaz Esperanza did. You turn yourself into immigration. And so when you have record numbers of children coming in every year, and we're getting to close to 100,000 unaccompanied minors that come yearly. And I mean, if you look it up, the numbers increase every year. And so is prevention through deterrence working? Clearly not. The numbers represent that clearly it doesn't work, but it highlights this book specifically through Díaz Esperanza's eyes, the inhumanity of it all. Because these children, for example, when they come to the United States and they are turning themselves into immigration, they go into these places called the perrera, which we would call like the dog kennel, hielera, which we call the ice box, cooler.
Because it's literally freezing in these rooms. Right. You just keep you in a place like a cold, cold, cold room.
Exactly. And I mean, if you read Díaz Esperanza's account of how freezing he was and how horrible that experience is, and I think that that's one of the most gripping parts of Detained, is reading his time in there, because he is essentially a child that is placed in a place that no child should ever be in. And while they're in these places before they're turned into Health and Human Services, they have the Flores Act and certain regulations to get these kids to Health and Human Services within like 2 to 3 days. And within this prevention through deterrence, at the facility that I was at, some of these kids had been at the Perrera, at the Yelera for a week. So clearly longer than they needed to. And then they're supposed to be in the care and custody of the United States for 2 weeks while they're being reunited with their sponsors. So they can go to a category 1, 2, 3 sponsor. Category 1 would be like Dia Esperanza, you're being reunited with a parent in the United States. Category 2, a sibling. Category 3, a friend of the family, some sort of connection in that. And I think the last is option, like the last option would be like the foster care system. Like these children could become adopted essentially or fostered. And so what's supposed to be 2 weeks of being inside of a child detention center, and we're talking about permanent detention centers. So permanent detention centers are the ones that you have throughout the border of the country. And these are permanent facilities. They have air conditioning. They have, they're an entire building, right? And so when these family separations were happening and these babies were being taken away from their parents and these toddlers were being separated, they were putting all these children that were separated from their families inside of these permanent facilities. And then the unaccompanied minors like Dia Esperanza, who had come here on their own, they were being shipped in the middle of the night to this influx temporary detention center, which if you look up, the infamous name is the Texas Tent City. Like Texas Tent City is the description of a child detention center that was open for close to 6 months in the United States. And these children were in these facilities for 5, 6 months. And we're talking about continuous detention. And so these 2 weeks for these process for them to be reunited with their sponsors, these FBI background checks that would take literal months and months, because they had to go through an extensive process to be reunited with their sponsor. And so these FBI background checks that someone can get for getting a job and you'll get within maybe 2, 3 days and you'll be hired on, was literally holding these kids in detention for 4 or 5 months.
So
the harder, yeah, the harder to make the situation, the more uncomfortable, the more unbearable their reasoning is. Well, you know, no one's going to be wanted to be detained for months on end without knowing anything. No one's going to want to be living this. Maybe if this is their experience, then we'll have less numbers, but that's just not the reality.
So the objective, the goal for D was to be reunited with his parents, his mother and father. They were in Nashville. And so they had left when he was from Honduras to go to work in the United States when he was a small child, an infant. Can you ask D about how was that the motivating factor? Was he always thinking about, if I could just get with my parents, then it would be worth it?
Perfect. De Esperanza,
sí.
¿Tú crees que la motivación que te guió en toda tu experiencia, en los 5 meses de llegar a Estados Unidos, en tus 5 meses de detenciones, fue la ilusión de por fin reunirte con tus papás? ¿Esa fue la motivación más grande que tenías? Cuéntanos un poquito de eso, de tus papás.
Claro, pues sobre todo la importancia era llegar hasta aquí a estar juntos, junto con mis papás.
Of course. The most important thing to me was coming to be reunited with my parents.
Mi mayor anhelo era estar aquí con ellos, poder compartir mi poca infancia que ya me quedaba con ellos.
My greatest wish was to be reunited with them and I could finally enjoy whatever childhood that I had left.
What was that like? When you were that reunion, what was that like?
¿Qué fue ese? ¿Cómo fue esa experiencia cuando te reuniste? Cuéntanos de esa experiencia al momento de verlos por primera vez.
Siempre diré que fue como una montaña rusa.
I always say that it's like a roller coaster.
Muy, muy llena de emociones y muchas vueltas.
Full of emotions and full of spins.
Al momento de estar ya a punto de verlos.
the moment leading up to finally, almost finally seeing them.
Mi corazón ya se iba a salir de mi pecho.
My heart was about to jump out of my chest.
Cuando los miré fue muy impactante.
When I saw them, it was really powerful.
Porque se miraban como personas desconocidas.
Because at first, they looked like strangers.
No eran las mismas personas que estaban en la fotografía.
They weren't the same people that were in the photograph that I would look at.
Pero al momento de abrazarnos,
but at the moment that they hugged me,
me sentí en casa.
I felt at home.
Sentí el calor de mi familia.
I felt the warmth of my family.
Pude llegarme a sentir seguro.
I was finally able to feel safe and sound.
Cuando por fin había encontrado a mi familia.
When I was finally able to be reunited with my family.
I wonder how your mother and your father were feeling throughout all of this as well. You know, they must have been just sick with worry.
Te pregunta que su pregunta es, ¿qué estaban pensando tus padres durante toda esta experiencia? Que él se imagina que han de haber estado muy preocupados por ti y por la situación.
Claro, por supuesto.
Yes, of course they were.
Yeah, but so now you're a parent, and so you know what it's like. You're working, you are contributing to society. You are, so are you still writing? Do you still write? I'm sure you have more stories to tell.
Ahora, tú eres un papá, estás trabajando, estás contribuyendo a la sociedad. Cuéntanos un poquito de ser papá y si sigues escribiendo, si tienes más historias que contar.
Ser papá me ha abierto mucho los ojos, pero me ha despertado muchos más miedos.
Becoming a father has opened my eyes in ways that I never expected, but it also filled me with so much fear.
Ahora puedo pensar mucho y mucho más en los pequeños niños que vi que estaban conmigo.
Now I can really look back at my time and look back at the little children that were with me in the journey throughout.
Porque ahora que llego a casa y veo a mi pequeño saltar de emoción por no verme por unas cuantas horas.
Because now that when I get home and my little son is jumping up in excitement because he hasn't seen me for a few hours.
Y a veces escuchar que mi esposa me dice que él está todo el día, ¿dónde está papá? ¿Dónde está papá?
And to hear my wife constantly ask, or constantly tell me that, right, he's always asking, where's dad? Where's dad?
All right, we have to wrap this up, but I do want to remind everyone that Saturday, 7 p.m. at Trinity University, there is a book signing. This is The Source at Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.